reason for asking is the subject matter is subtle. I'm going to be reading from a verse, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 19. And the title of the chapter is Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. And the big picture is, this is Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha means relationship. And specifically, it's the relationship between three things, three entities: Ishvara, Prakriti, and Jiva. The Supreme Lord, material nature, and the living entity. According to Bhagavad Gita, those three make up everything in this world. Of course, there's two other. According to Bhagavad Gita, introduction, Baladeva says there's five, not just three, five topics that Bhagavad Gita discusses, those three, plus time and karma. Those are the five topics of Bhagavad Gita. Here is three. We close the door. It's specific to the process of creation. And I'll speak in broad terms initially, just to give you kind of like a background. The previous chapter, 25, is discussing devotional service, the glories of devotional service. And of those of you that attended the program last night, may recall the discussion was on how the process of devotional service begins. And it begins by association with sadhu. Last night. And Lord Chaitanya instructs Sanatana Goswami, chapter 22, Bhajanila, that sadhu sangha is necessary in the beginning, it's necessary in the perfect stage, which means it's necessary throughout. One of the verses that Lord Chaitanya referred to as scriptural support for that statement was what we discussed last night, the statement by King Mujjukunda, chapter 51 of 10th Canto, how his devotional service began was association with a devotee, Sangha Garbhamuni. Another verse of the three, we'll just make mention of tonight, but is a verse spoken from chapter 25, just prior to chapter 26 of Canto 3, where Kapila Deva is explaining the same principle to Devahuti. Devotional service begins through association with sadhu. And then he describes the characteristics of a sadhu. Very glorious. So that's how devotional service begins. And then after finishing that chapter, there's the next discussion, that's this chapter 26, is Sambandha Gyan. What's Sambandha Gyan? Again, Sambandha Gyan is knowledge of the relationship of all things with their source of emanation. With the source of emanation, whatever that is, that's the absolute truth, according to Vedanta. Say it the other way. The absolute truth is that from which everything comes. Whatever that is, that's the absolute truth. And Vedanta teaches, and Srimad Bhagavatam, the commentary on Vedanta teaches that Satyam Param Dhimahi, that absolute truth is Krishna. So, devotional service is the means for elevation, but before there's elevation, there has to be a spiritual conception. Someone began. So chapter 26 is someone began. To take that devotional service understanding, start it on the right platform. That's the, so that's something we need. We need devotional service, but we also need to have a spiritual conception. Because otherwise, without looking at the compass, we may be heading very quickly in the wrong direction. We need to be heading in the right direction, based on a spiritual conception. See it the other way. Many people have sentimental notions about things. The world is full of them. Religious fervor, unguided by scripture, is sentimentality. Taken to extreme, it becomes fanaticism. Everybody knows that's very dangerous. So, you should be properly grounded in somebody. Yeah, that's what this chapter is. So to one of the ways to explain somebody again is the way that's chosen here. It's describing the process of creation. In the process of creation, there's these three things. The source of emanation, the material energy, and the living entities. And what's the relation between them? So that we can have a proper spiritual conception as we look around and see stuff. How does this relate to the source of emanation? How does that relate to the source of... How do all things relate to the source of emanation? Then I have a proper spiritual conception, and then I can take chapter 25 and move with devotional service. In fact, that's what sadhus do. One of the things that sadhus do is they help establish a spiritual conception. It's exactly what Kapila is doing with Devahuti. Somebody again. The medium of that topic going to be a squeaky door. Maybe somebody that has a oil thing can fix it before tomorrow. Yeah. Welcome, come on in. I'm sure traffic was like a challenge. It's a little difficult to do a rewind and having. We just did some preliminary groundwork to help understand the subject matter, because the subject matter is a little complicated. The process of creation is the subject matter, and it's a little complicated. In Surup Damodar from Maharaj's discussions with Prabhupada, on this subject matter, he, as the scientist who wanted to follow Prabhupada's instructions of showing life comes from life, this is a very essential part of showing life comes from life. And so he started asking Prabhupada several questions. And Prabhupada said, it's complicated. Prabhupada said, so I'm sharing the same view. It's complicated. But it's important to listen carefully. And if you don't catch the detail, no problem. You can go back to Godhead. Capture the essence. The essence is life comes from life. And Krishna is life. But part of Krishna is also matter, or the prakriti. It's one of his bina prakriti of shrira, separated material and energies. But it's from him. And how is, what's that relationship? Well, the relationship is achintya. It's inconceivable. Inconceivably one and different. Inconceivably one and different. What's that? What's inconceivable? But we can describe it, but it's the binary processor of the mind can hold this one and can hold that one, but simultaneously this one and that one, the binary processor of the mind can't do both, therefore inconceivable. The mind can't conceive of something that's simultaneously this and that, like a one and a zero at the same time. Can't be. It's a one. It can go back and forth between a one and a zero, no problem, just like the switch. On, off, on, off. But on and off? Come on. The mind can't conceive of it. So Prakriti is like that. It's connected to Krishna, but different from Krishna. Living entity is also connected to Krishna and different from Krishna. So that's part of the sambandhagyan. That's a little subtle. So there's samenesses and there's differences, and one needs to hear from Lord Kapiladeva, like the personality of Godhead. And in this case, he's a Shakti Avatar, explaining how it is. You have to listen carefully. Because you know, the sentimental idea is, no problem, everything comes from God. And then you meet a scientist and says, show me. You people are just sentimentalists. I'll show you I can produce life in a test tube. Or at least I have a theory that says you can do so. And here's how life began. I have a complete explanation of how life began with no God. And kind of like, prove me wrong. So we say the same thing. Here's our conception, prove me wrong. And it's a stalemate. And you know, the dollars are with the scientists. You know what I mean? What's it called? Military-industrial complex. They got lots of money. And they do lots of research too. Show things that show the spiritualists are silly people. Look at all that we're doing over here in this world of technology. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Some of it's bluff. You know, that sense helps the research grants come flowing in. Those that are in academia know all about it. And those that are in the corporate world kind of know all about it. One of the ways of building the economy is you get... Anyway, I don't go off in that direction. Getting government money, having government support, partnering corporations with academic institutions. So academic institutions are just like extensions of the corporate world. It's not about knowledge. It's about, you know, building products. Doing the research of how the push and the pull of things work, all technology gets stuff. And you go, yay! Science is right. Science and technology key job. And the spiritualists, they're an impediment for our progress. You know the program. Those of you that are involved in this. So, here's this voice of the spiritualist that says, no, everything comes from God. Boom, everything comes from God. Life comes from matter. And at least in the West, probably also in India, I'm ranting here a little bit, but education is compulsory. It's against the law in the West to not have children go to school. They must go to school. You're in violation of the law. You're punishable by the law if you don't send your kids to school. So if you might send your kids to school anyway, but it's a law. And, part two, God's out. Secular. separation of church and state. You cannot speak anything about God in the classroom. Unless it's like over there, or it's like religious studies, and some people believe in this, and some people believe in this, but can't come into the world of science, like how things really happen. I have a, as did Prabhupada, I abhor that notion. There's battles in the courtrooms in the United States, in different states, about whether curriculum in science can even suggest the possibility of anything other than mechanistic science. It's like it's against the law, and there are people challenging it, and they're losing because who's got the money? It's really sad. Anyway, so we're trying to be devotees in a very toxic world that has lots invested by the intellectuals and moneyed sector that want God out of the picture. So here we are, the biblical model is David and Goliath, you know, somebody small and somebody big having a fight. Like last night, you know, Krishna fighting each other in Mushtika. Professional wrestlers that were capable of fighting against Kamsa. In other words, mismatch. But wherever there's Krishna and Arjuna, there's sure to be success. So we have to be on the Krishna and Arjuna side, be fortified with transcendental knowledge. So if somebody says, oh, this idea of God is the source of everything is rubbish, we can stand up and say, excuse me, but here's the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'll just share this last thing. I like this very much. Professor Henry Staff, S-T-A-P-H, you can Google his name sometime if you like, is a Nobel laureate in physics based in California, Berkeley. He was invited by the BI in Berkeley to go to Jubal, spend 1 month studying from morning till night for 1 month, given a stipend, a little sabbatical, for studying Samkhya philosophy of Kapilavati, like what we're describing right now today. And his assignment was, see if there's anything within your knowledge of empirical science that says this is falsifiable. You know the terminology, falsifiability. It cannot be because here's some factual information that says, boo, this can't be. And the man was very austere. He was up before the devotees were up. He was up at 2:30 in the morning. From his balcony, he saw Mangalarti, and then, from morning till night, and he was studying Samkhya philosophy, Bhagavatam, what we're talking now, and other chapters. And the conclusion was, there's nothing within modern science that I'm aware of that falsifies what you're hearing just now. Doesn't prove it's right. That's part of the trickiness of science. But it's not falsifiable. Go. Now the verse. And I'll say it again, if you don't catch the detail, those of you that came in late, it's okay, you can still go back to Godhead. But it's important that we get proper sambandh again, we understand what's what, how it works, the push and the pull, all you technology folks, whether it's information technology or mechanical engineering or electrical engineering or whatever it is that you're involved in, there's a cause and effect of things, and there's the original cause. So this is describing the process of creation. And the verse reads, this is text 19, chapter 26, canto 3, fundamental principles of material nature. Kapiladeva says, After the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates material nature with his internal potency, material nature delivers. The sum total of the cosmic intelligence, which is known as Hiranmaya. This takes place in material nature when she is agitated by the destinations of the conditioned souls. What was all of that? Purport. The impregnation of material nature is described in Bhagavad Gita 14th chapter, verse 3. So what's 14th chapter, verse 3? Mama yonir mahat brahma tasmin garham dadamyaham sambhava sarvabhuteshu tato bhavati bharata. The total material substance, that's mahat brahma, total material substance. So again, this is, for those of you that came late, this is the inconceivableness of all things from their source of emanation. They're one with and different from. It's true about all things. There's one thing that the source, all things have a relationship of oneness and difference. Now this is specifically property, the relationship of property. It's called Mahat Brahma. Just quickly, there are three, the term Brahman has three different applications, and this is one of those three. The living entity is also Brahman, and there is Parabrahman. So when you hear the term Brahman, you have to be tuned into which Brahman? Mahat Brahman, the living entity, or the supreme living entity. And they're distinct. It's not one, they're distinct. Madhvacharya's teaching. They're dvaita. Although they're of the same, that they're anyway, the source, because they're from the source, there's an absolute nature in those things. So here's the total material substance called Brahman. That Brahman, the total material substance, Mahat Brahman, is the source of birth. That's the mother. And it is that Brahman that I impregnate. That's Parabrahma. And what does he impregnate with? The living entity, another Brahman. You with me? So this is about relationship. Parabrahman, Mahat Brahman, and the living entity. Aham Brahmasmi. Three different Brahmins. And then he makes reference to text 4, so read text 4 ahead of time. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, sarva yoneshu kamteya, murtaya sambhavantiya, tasmat brahma mahat yonir. Yonir is the source of birth. The mahat brahma is the source of birth. The mother. Prakriti is mother. And Krishna is Purusha. And the living entities are injected within the womb of material nature. Aham bija pradapita. He's the pita, he's the father, giving the bijas, the seeds of the living entities. So that's the Bhagavad Gita, where in the Bhagavatam the same thing is also being said. Now we'll go back to the third part. This impregnation of material nature is described in Bhagavad Gita 14th chapter, verse 3. Material nature's primal factor is the Mahat Tattva, or breeding source of all varieties. Primal factor. Say, it's when we think of material nature, the indication is the primary thing where our thought should go to material nature is Mahatattva. What's Mahatattva? It's the breeding source of all varieties. How is that? It's going to be untapped. But mahatattva means the differentiated state of the totality of matter. There's an undifferentiated state that's called pradhana. Just terminology of this state before agitation and after agitation. So it's like the womb of the mother, and then when the womb of the mother is impregnated. The womb of the mother, the ingredients are there for the potential is there, the capacity to produce a child, to produce a body is there, but nothing happens until the living entity comes. And in the primordial act of procreation is Mahavishnu's glance, which was the previous verse. He glances. There's many things that happen before the glance. But when he glances at pradhan, his internal potency, Rama, just like the Sita Ram, Lakshmi Ram, Radha Krishna, Rama, Mahavishnu, she's his internal potency. And when you see pictures of Mahavishnu, where's Rama? You don't see her. Why? She's within, sometimes without, Sitaram, sometimes within. And that state of where she is within and they're enjoying their eternal pastime within has a name, Yogi Nidra. It's not like a mere sleep. It's a mystic slumber. And he is with Rama, and Rama is with him. They're inseparable, energetic and energy, enjoying their eternal pastimes. So she, Rama, understands the Icha, the desire, or the will of Mahavishnu. What's his will? It's two things. That reflection of Rama over there, Chayadevi, or Pradhan, she wants something to do. She doesn't have anything to do. She wants to serve me. I'd like to give her some service. It's just a desire. He doesn't have to do anything. He just sees her and has that desire. Second, the living entities within the body of Mahavishnu. And a second compassionate desire is, this is directly from the Bhagavatam. He wishes that they can experience the fullness of their happiness. He wishes that for them. Like a father wishes that for a child. Natural. But right now they're in this susupti state, completely dormant state of consciousness. They're still conscious, living entities are eternally conscious, but their consciousness is so covered. I desire, I wish for them the ultimate happiness they can achieve. That's all, those two compassionate desires. Rama Devi recognizes, my Lord has this desire. So what does she want to do? She wants to fulfill this desire. She's his internal potency. So she does two things. One of her sub-potencies is Kala Shakti, time energy. In the spiritual realm, time is eternal. But that time that's eternal can expand into the other kind of time, the one that we know, past, present, and future kind. It's an expansion of eternal time. So that time, energy, along with the living entities who are within the body of Mahavishnu, are entrusted to the glands. Kala and Jiva, by Rama, are entrusted to the glands of Mahavishnu, and specifically entrusted to Shambhu, who carries, he's not exactly the glands, but according to the language of Brahma Samhita, he's the dim twilight reflection of the glance. That's Bhaktisiddhanta's language, figured out. Dim twilight reflection of the glance. And then Shambhu contacts Pradhan. That's the impregnation, primordial. So he, Shambhu, becomes transformed like milk in touch with the souring agent. Mahavishnu never contacts material nature. Shambhu contacts material nature. And then the living entities, along with the time energy, are touched, or they touch. They're touched by Pradhan, or they touch Pradhan, and they agitate Pradhan. And then Pradhan, the undifferentiated totality of material energy, starts to differentiate. And the first element that separates out is our dear friend, false ego. And it all starts from there. Before there's even things happening, there's false ego. And then, without detailing it, the detail is there. The elements separate out. Now we have 24 elements. And then, Mahavishnu does another thing. He breathes. Now his breath is not like ours, but he exhales. And within the pores of his transcendental body, there are golden eggs or seeds of universes. He's got a big body. Even seeds can be very small, but still, I mean, a seed of a universe. And those seeds enter that Mahatattva. And the Mahatattva elements start to cling to those seeds. And they start to expand the seeds. Now what I'm describing is Canto 3, Chapter 5. And it's similarly discussed in Brahma Samhita. So then those elements, they have deities, like primordial devatas, because there's no universes yet. It's not the devatas that people generally go and worship in Karmakanda rituals. It's primordial devatas, and the primordial devatas, Canto 3, Chapter 5, realize we have a service to do and we can't cooperate. You know what that's like. So we need help. And so they pray to Mahavishnu, help. Please make the arrangements so that we can do our service properly. Chapter 6 begins of Canto 3, saying, the Lord, hearing the prayer of these primordial devatas, he then expands himself, listen carefully, as Sharadakshai Vishnu. Not Garbhadakshai Vishnu first, because there's no universes yet to enter into. It's Sharadakshai Vishnu enters within every particle of matter of the 24 varieties, along with time energy, once again, because things don't happen without time. Read carefully the 12th canto. How does cosmic manifestation get annihilated? The Lord withdraws his time energy. It's all over. How does it begin? His time energy. That's how it gets going. So he, Sharadakshai Vishnu, along with his time energy, and in this case, the language is used interchangeably, Kali, not the goddess Kali that people worship today, Kali as the energy of the Lord for combining. Pausing so it sinks in. The energy of the Lord for combining is carried along with Sharadakshai Vishnu. And then the demigods, the primordial devas, along with this presence of Sharadakshai Vishnu and the energy of combining, the universe starts to form. Garbhadakshai Vishnu hasn't entered yet. And then Garbhadakshai Vishnu enters and fills up half the universe with the Garbhadak ocean. And then other things start to happen on that Garbhadak ocean. Well, when he enters, Garbhadakshai Vishnu enters each of the universes. He takes a portion of the totality of living entities that were injected by the glance, one universe worth of living entities, because there's so many universes, and then another universe, and so all the living entities have their place. Some of those living entities are they're taken by him into the shell, the interior portion of the universe, now that it's started to form with shells, layers. And this Narvardakosha. And then you're going to hear this, because this is a preview of something that's the universal form called the Virat or Virat Rupa appears, which is a temporary form of the Supreme Lord and rests upon the Garbhadakosha for 1,000 celestial years. What is Mahavishnu doing? He's enjoying with Rama Devi, his eternal pastimes within. He's in Yoga Nidra. And our Acharya is saying he's demonstrating the fact that he's transcendentally aloof from all of this. He doesn't have to do anything. And he's doing something. He's enjoying his eternal pastimes internally with Rama Devi for 1,000 celestial years while Prabhupada describes it's like footballs floating on the ocean. Universes with their shells and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu within, Mahavishnu reclining, Chiradakshaya Vishnu within each of the atoms of the elements. The show is ready to go and it doesn't happen yet. He is very patient. He's transcendentally situated. So now, what's being said, I'll just continue with the report. This part of material nature, which is called Pradhan, as well as Brahman, but specifically, which Brahman? Mahabrahman, that one, is impregnated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and delivers, that's this Mahabrahman, delivers varieties of living entities. Not the souls, but the coverings of the souls. That is another. Living entities can mean the soul. In this case, just like Atma can mean the soul, it can mean the body, it can mean the mind. In this case, it means the bodies and minds. The coverings of the souls are delivered by Mahabrahman. Material nature in this connection is called Brahman because it is a perverted reflection of the spiritual nature. What's the perverted reflection of the spiritual nature? Just like you could go wind back to the earlier discussion. There's Mahavishnu with Rama. And over there is Chaya, in shadow. So she, Chaya Devi, is a reflection. An expanded reflection, the language of the Brahma Samhita is like a maidservant to Rama is Chaya. It's like a co-wife, metaphorically. And she's over there and has nothing to do with she's a reflection of, she's not the fullness of the internal potency, she's a reflection of the internal potency. That's Chaya Devi, or Pradhan, or Mahatattva, or Mahadhamana. These different terms are just describing aspects of the same energy. So don't get confused by the terminology. Paragraph. It is described in the Vishnu Purana that the living entity belongs to the spiritual nature. Anybody know that verse? Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta. Kshetra Gya Cha Tata Ara Avidya Karma Samgaya Tritiya. So there's three. That's what we say. And the Supreme Lord has these three potencies: internal, external, and marginal. Real simple. Here's the scriptural reference for that. Vishnu Shakti Para. Para Shakti, spiritual. There's his internal potency, prokta, it is said. So that's one. His internal potency is in the category of parasha. Then Kshetragya, you know, chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra and Kshetragya, there's the field of activity and the knower of the field of activity, chapter 13. So what's Kshetragya? That's the living entity. Of course, there's a Kshetragya cha. There's another one. Sarva Chaitanya Bharata, that's super soul. He's also Kshetragya, and he knows Sarva Chaitanya. He knows all fields of activity. We're the living entity that knows this one. What's our, what we're feeling, the mind and the body and things like that. Limited. And then there's unlimited. So this Prabhupada said, Krishna is so expert in one word, he has defeated Mayavad philosophy just by this word chat. And then the whole class of chat. There's two knowers. One that knows the individual field and the one that knows all fields. Two. Not one. Two. Cha. So, Kshetragya. Kshetragya kya tata para. So there's the internal focus. The living entity is also para. Which is what Prabhupada is saying in the purport, just in one sentence. And then, avidya karma. Guess what that is? That's the material energy. Sangyaya, it is said, knowers say like this. Tatiya shaktir. There's three energies of Vishnu. Spiritual, or internal potency, marginal potency, and the material potency. It's his. It produces a vidya karma, depending upon how we regard it. It doesn't have to. It can be an instrument of devotional service, too. But when covered, then its deluding potency prevails. Jatiya shaktir ishate. It is accepted by learned personalities to say this. So, back to the purport, paragraph 2. It is described in the Vishnu Purana that the living entities belong to the spiritual nature, para, but they can be covered. The potency of the Supreme Lord is spiritual, living entities. And the living entities, although they are called marginal potency, are also spiritual. If the living entities were not spiritual, this description of impregnation of the Supreme Lord would not be applicable. That's the statement. And then he supports it. The Supreme Lord does not put his semen to that which is not spiritual, but it is stated here that the Supreme Person puts his semen into material nature. Bahad Brahman. Besting oneness. And then there's the difference aspect. So our linear brains have a problem with this and that at the same time. He's introducing, or he's relying upon, the achintya bade abade aspect. So material nature, in this case, is the abade. It's from Krishna, and therefore, because it's from Krishna, it's spiritual. But it can act in a material way also, depending upon if one has proper sambandhigyan or not. If one has proper sambandhigyan, then I can use this microphone and things in Krishna's service, and it can act spiritually. Let's just step back. In the longest chapter in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is called Prayers by the Personified Vedas. It's chapter 87 of Canto 10. And it comes at the end. If anybody has read it, boy, your head will spin. Take the dictionary, read it 20 times, and you still don't understand it. It's very, very, very high. It comes at the end of the 10th canto, almost at the end. 89 is the last chapter. after Shukadeva Goswami has imparted everything about Krishna through the nine cantos and then Krishna's pastimes, 10th canto, paraphrasing, Maharaj Pariksit goes, wow, I'm ready for anything. I'm fixed in transcendental consciousness. Let that snake bird come, whatever that mystical thing is, I'm ready. I'm ready to go to Krishna. And then he expresses a doubt. But I have a doubt. How did this happen? Because all that's taken place is something material. Your tongue is something material. My ear have been engaged. And I got to this really wonderful place through something material. How did it happen? Please explain. And Shukadeva Goswami says, very good question. It's such a good question. Long, long ago, sages were discussing this question. And when they were discussing this question, they said, oh, this is such a good question. Long, long ago, it was this, no, it was a classic question. And then he refers to a discussion between the four Kumaras and the personified Vedas discussing this question. One can imagine what level of conversation that was. Very deep. And to make it really simple, here's the answer. Everything comes from Krishna, including tongues and ears. And when they're used in service to Krishna, the spiritual quality is restored. And so the tongue can act in a spiritual way, the ear can act in a spiritual way, with one requirement. They're used in relation to their source of emanation, in devotion, and then spiritual potency is activated. They become spiritualized, using Prabhupada's language. Or the spiritual quality is restored. The oneness aspect is actuated through bhakti, with proper sambandha again. Okay. So before the 10th canto comes the 3rd canto. Sambandha again. Lots of it. Makes your head spin, makes you want to just like, let's go to some fast time. This is too complicated. So the Mahat Brahman, the emphasis here is the oneness aspect of Prakriti or Mahatattva or Mahat Brahman and its relationship with Krishna. The oneness aspect is being emphasized while at the same time there's a difference aspect. After impregnation, material nature delivers all kinds of living entities, beginning from the greatest living creature, Lord Brahma, down to the insignificant ant in all varieties of form. In Bhagavad Gita 14.4, you read it. Material nature is clearly mentioned as Sarva Yonishu. What does Yoni mean? Yoni means womb. Sarva Yonishu. It's the womb, material nature is like the big womb for all living entities. The original impregnation with the universe's quota of living entities are impregnated by the glands of Mahavishnu into Pradhan. And then the elements are separated out by that impregnation, and then the process of the living entity, in short, material nature, in this case Mahatattva or Mahat Brahman, supplies the ingredients within the womb and living entities are produced. Lord Brahma is, you know, has a part to play too. He's the engineer. He does some things. This means that all varieties of species, dash, demigods, human beings, animals, birds, beasts, parentheses, whatever is manifested. Material nature is the mother, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the seed-giving father. Generally, it is experienced that the father gives life to the child, but the mother gives its body. Although the seed, that's a semicolon. Although the seed of life is given by the father, the body is developed within the womb of the mother. Similarly, the spiritual living entities are impregnated into the womb of material nature, but the body, being supplied by material nature, takes on many species and forms of life. So here comes the conclusion. The theory that the symptoms of... I think the child needs to go outside. Nice try. The theory that the symptoms of life are manifested by the interaction of the 24 elements is not supported here. Life doesn't come from matter. The living force comes directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is completely spiritual. Remember the verse from Vishnu Purana. Kshatrigya kya tata para. Kshatrigya kya tata para. The living entity is spiritual. Para. Therefore, last sentence. Oops, two more. Therefore, no material scientific advancement can produce life. The living force comes from the spiritual world and has nothing to do with the interaction of the material elements. End of purport. So I wanted to do one other thing, and that is, it's not, I mean, there's not a lot of emphasis on this term here on Maya, but it's in the verse, so I wanted to expand on it a little bit. The verse says, I'll read the translation again. After the Supreme Personality Godhead impregnates material nature with his internal potency, para shakti, living entities being that, material nature delivers the sum total of the cosmic intelligence. Now, cosmic intelligence is mahat tattva. Interestingly, Prabhupada has translated that in the word for word, the sum total of cosmic intelligence. And then the next word is hiranmayam, known as hiranmaya. So like Brahman, needs to be understood according to context. It can mean this, that, or the other thing, according to context. Hiranmaya also needs to be understood according to context. And here's a little short list of what Hiranmaya is sometimes used as. I'm doing this for a purpose, not like, you know, to do anything other than one thing. When you hear a term, like you just hear this one, Hiranmaya, it means the Mahatattva. And then later on you hear Hiranmaya used in a different way, and then used in a different way, and used in a different way, and your head can spin. Because we have this linear thing about how we like to understand things. The Bhagavatam doesn't always work that way. In fact, Sanskrit doesn't always work that way. One needs to understand a thing according to context. And there's primary meanings according to Sanskrit, and primary meanings may not be taken according to Sanskrit rules if it doesn't make sense, doesn't follow if it's... And so a secondary meaning can then be taken. So here, as with Brahman, Hiranmaya can mean different things according to its application. Now these are examples taken directly from the Bhagavatam, where... in this case, Hiranmaya means Mahatattva. Then, as I was describing to you, the congealing or clinging of elements around the seeds of universes, golden seeds, Hiranmaya, they're called Hirangarbha, golden seeds. And then they're not cooperating, so the devas, primordial devas, pray to the Supreme Lord, and Shiradakshaya Vishnu enters within every atom of matter, along with his congealing potency, time energy, or Kali. And then the universes start to form. They form their shells. And then Hiranmaya appears. It means something different than this one, or it's according to application. Specifically, this is, you can look it up later, Canto 3, Chapter 6, text number 6. Because right after that, the Virat Purusha, or Hiranmaya, appears. And here, what's that? It's the same, read the purport, it's the same universal form that Arjuna saw. And it's the Supreme Lord, where the totality of living beings within that universe are situated. And that Virat Rupa flows on the causal ocean, the Garbhagat ocean, for 1,000 celestial years. So a term besides Virat Purusha, in that case, is Hiranmaya. And then there's another one. And that's when Garbhadakshaya Vishnu generates from his navel a lotus. And that's also known as Hiranmaya, the lotus within which the living entities that will later take their birth, starting from Lord Brahma, then the pool of living entities from that are taken from the lotus by Lord Brahma, and he gives them bodies. He's the engineer of bodies and places for the bodies to reside, the planets. So the various species. He has assistants, the Prajapatis. But the pool of living entities is within this Virat, or Hiranmaya. And there's another that comes later in the Bhagavatam, where the presiding deity in the sun planet is also known as Hiranmaya. So there's sun, Surya, and there's Surya Narayan, the presiding deity of Surya. And he's also known as Hiranmaya. There's not a one-to-one correlation between these two terms, except that Hiran means effulgent, golden in color. Now, so all of that is not to bewilder you. It's just to help. The opposite. When you hear a term, I like it because I don't know Sanskrit. I don't know Hindi. I only know English. So when I hear Sanskrit terms, it's really nice because it's like a whole new thing. Clean slate. Here's a term. Something means, and then Prabhupada explains what it means. So now it's like, okay, the concept now has a term. And the term indicates the concept. But it can be confusing if the term then is used in different ways, and your head spins. Because you want it to be that, but it's not that. It's in a different application, it's something else. And so it's to deconfuse you. When you hear, now that you've heard Hiranmaya indicating Mahatattva, it can mean other things, so don't get bewildered. According to application, it can mean different things. And final, this verse, it relevant to our discussion last night, this verse, 3:26-19, that we've been discussing this morning, is referred to by Lord Chaitanya in his talks with Sanatana Goswami, when he's explaining the process of devotional service. Isn't that nice? We're going to read what it says. This is Lord Chaitanya explaining to do bhakti, same as I've been saying, we have to have proper sambandha again. You have to know what's what. Otherwise you've got a sentimental thing going on. and this one's got this sentiment, and that one's got that sentiment, and somebody, group of people like this sentiment, and another group like that sentiment, you've got groupism, you've got bashing when they're trying to do devotional service. No good. Let's not do that. Let's have proper sambha begin, just by carefully hearing, receiving the message that Lord Chaitanya is giving. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam means, and it is acharyas in specific succession. They explain this is what it means. So we have a spiritual conception upon which devotional service can grow. We can move toward Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami and then told him, write literatures that explain it. I'm not going to write books. You write the books. I'm empowering you to write the books. Here's the essence. Okay, so this is the translation from Madhya Lila, chapter 20, 274. Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatana Goswami on Sambandhigyan, science of the absolute truth. What we quoted last night was how about devotional service, because from the foundation of spiritual conception, then you can have devotional service that moves towards Krishna. So he does 20 before 22. Sambandhigyan. Here's the translation. Prabhupada's translation is the same verse, which is different than we find in the Bhagavatam. Same verse. At a time beyond memory, after agitating the material nature into three qualities, the three modes, after agitating the material nature, pradhan, into three qualities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead placed the semen of innumerable living entities within the womb of that material nature. Thus, material nature gave birth to the total material energy, pradhan, then produced mahatattva, known as Hiranmaya Mahatattva, the original symbolic representation of the cosmic manifestation. Meaning, it hasn't happened yet. The details haven't happened yet, but it's like, it's the pool, or the resource from which all the varieties come. So it's the, Prabhupada's language, the original symbolic representation. And this word for word, Hiranmayam, means the original source for the emanation of varieties of material things. So, end of class, just a little summary. What was all this about? This is Kapiladev teaching to Devahuti, which means he's teaching us how to have a proper conception of what's what. And there's three what's. And there's the source, there's living entities, and there's material nature. And there's stages of unfolding of the material nature, and so there's different terms to describe it. But the varieties of life are there produced from the womb. That material energy is Krishna's energy, which is spiritual because it's connected to him. But acting in a particular way because of the consciousness of the living entities, which is, I want to enjoy independently, and so they're provided the instrument for enjoying independently. Is that your daughter? You recognize the voice. Could you ask, whoever's out there making the noise, mother can take the child to a different place? The children or whatever it is? It's one of those things about classes. The mothers want to hear the class, and the children want to make the noise. And it's not compatible. So they stand outside. They can't hear the class anyway, but the children are still making the noise. It's like a class. Sometimes Prabhupada would tolerate it, and sometimes in a stern voice he would say, take the child away, and just go on there. Nothing happened. Anyway. So, it's samband again. The material nature in different stages, pradan, mahatattva, producing elements, providing varieties of forms, hiran maya, producing those varieties, and it's golden because the living entities are there, and living entities are effulgent like the Lord. But it doesn't happen. Wombs of mothers don't produce children without the living entity being present. And the living entity doesn't produce children without the wombs of mothers. And both have their relationship with the original father. There's no material nature and there's no living entities without the source of both of them. So this is kind of like a slow motion breakdown of what happened before we came into being as like the world we are. So-and-so Das, or Dasi. What happened before? We don't know. 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says nobody knows. Because it existed before you existed, so you can't know. Except when that which existed before you existed reveals what happened. Then you can know. That's what existed before you existed. That's what we're hearing. And with a spiritual conception. And one can, so that requires some faith. That's a very important element. And one should be very careful where you repose your faith. Because you can say, well, I don't believe. Then you believe in something else, you know, because it's intrinsic to the soul. And you believe in your mind or whatever it is you want to believe in. Professor Dawkins, Hawkins, or whatever you know, somebody. I believe in that. Or whatever. So faith is there. Chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. If you don't have faith in Krishna, you can have faith in something according to the laws of nature. So selectively reposing faith wisely, that's a responsibility. But here is the Bhagavatam giving us this picture of what existed before we existed. Completely in symmetry with the message of Bhagavad Gita. One very simply, one with great detail. The undergraduate and graduate level of understanding of what's what, something again. And again, just a summary. With proper sambandha again, then we can move, not sentimentally, but clearly, unshakably, fixed towards the absolute truth, towards the goal of devotion, without getting bewildered or sidetracked or something. Somebody says something else, and you get, well, maybe it's true, or maybe it's that instead of this, or something. Grounded in scriptural understanding. Sorry for the long class, but as I said, it's like, at the very beginning, it's complex. In Prabhupada's own words, for those of you that came late, Sukhdamanar was discussing this very section with Prabhupada. It's recorded and transcribed, and he was asking, what about this, what about that, specifically on this verse. And Prabhupada said, it's complicated. And Sukhdamanar says, well, we want to understand it very clearly, although it's complicated, because it's the foundation of the assignment you've given us. Life comes from life. So how does it work? And then you start to have a long discussion. And it's complicated. But it's consistent, and it's scientific, and it's non-falsifiable by modern science. At least, Professor Henry Stapp. He wrote a little booklet, BI published it, and then he wrote some papers in academic journals, putting his, you know, his scholarly credential at risk, perhaps, because some other people go, oh, look at this foolish Nobel laureate who's saying that Sankhya philosophy is not falsifiable. Boo, he's bad. He's like brainwashed. Something's wrong with him. The academic community can easily throw mud at somebody like that. But he did it. Because he's a man of integrity. He didn't say I accept it. It's just, it's not falsifiable, that's all. But with detail. Go with detail. This statement, with detail. Kind of, you know. He gave a popular version, meaning people that aren't scientists, how they could understand what his conclusions were. And he gave one for academic people, you know, the puffy buffies that speak another language, and he explained it in their language. I take it as very significant. So, any comments or questions? Yeah.
Thank you very much for a nice class, Maharaj. I had a question. During the class, you have mentioned that there is a tendency when we read scriptures, certain sections it sounds very interesting, certain sections it is difficult to understand it also. How did your suggestion in advance in terms of how to read with interest?
How to do what? What's the punchline of your question? Not the whole preamble. Just the final?
Certain sections are very...
No, not the preamble. What's the end? How to?
Read those sections which we find it difficult to understand and it's complicated as these chapters.
Okay. This is what I do. So I can share with you what I do. Vyasadeva includes a lot of this in the Bhagavatam. And there's a purpose why he does. It's not to bewilder our brain, or as Prabhupada's language, puzzle the brain. It's to give us the right foundation. We're lazy. You know, so, and it's challenging, and maybe even it's dry. And we want, you know, juicy, easy to read pastimes things. But if we read those pastimes things, this is what inspires me. If you read them without the proper foundation of spiritual conception, we may get purified, but we may also, you know, start heading in the wrong direction. So we need we need what Vyasadeva wanted to give us, so that we can hear the pastimes portions and, you know, receive the fullness of the message through those pastimes. And not be guided by sentiment and material conceptions as we're getting inspired. So the purpose is something we should want to receive, and so that's the fuel in the tank, and you can keep going. It's purposeful. It's not dry. It's clearing the material conceptions. I'll say the same thing in a different way. Prabhupada said that perhaps the most formidable obstacle for propagating bhakti was the blind faith that people have in modern science. And therefore he was modern science bashing. Purposely. Because it was a big obstacle. They have a stranglehold on the intellect. And the intellect is supposed to guide the mind and senses. But the intellect has this paradigm that's godless. He's not in the picture. You don't need God at all. It's just matter combines, makes life. It's right in the Bhagavad Gita. It's the demoniac nature. Life is produced by sex. That's it. So just have sex. You know, skip the what the outcome is. Just have sex. That's like modern, you know, marketing to get people to buy soap, or, you know, to buy a toothbrush, or to buy, you know, anything. Just show up the half-clothed woman on the billboard. and sell your product. I mean, you know, anyways, aside from... So, how do you get away from that? You have, you know, you're going to have a spiritual conception. You got to get down to, you know, doing your homework. What's a spiritual conception? How does it all come about? And then, if once that has, you know, you hear it, and hear it again, and hear it again, and hear it again, then a light goes on. Oh! And then you're doing your activities of life with that at the center, the spiritual conception. You're in the workplace, or you're in your home, or you're with your children, or with your wife, or with people doing, you know, your marketplace, you're doing things, you're living. And operate with spiritual conception, so you can stay in the conception of bhakti throughout, A to Z. Not just when you're chanting japa and reading scripture, and attending RT and going to the temple. Life, with a spiritual conception. And so then, when you do your chanting, and you do your hearing and studying, it's explosive. Bhakti is happening, and not like getting in this two-world situation, the secular way of religious life. There's what I do for God, and then there's anything else. You know, God isn't in the picture. There's a lot of people that, anyway, so it's to have the proper foundation to go forward in all aspects of life so that bhakti can grow and grow as Lord Chaitanya described it grows, as a creeper will grow, piercing the coverings of the universe into the spirituals, and all that nice metaphor. It's not just like, you know, poetry. It's something you can experience directly. It has to be a proper conception. Different than the one that we've heard since childhood and got trained up in. You know that one? And it's very powerful. It's all around us. And, you know, we're few. And lots of energy out there saying something else. From the science world, from the commercial world, the marketing world, consumer world, education, society, behaviors, norms, conventions. There's some degree of sentiment that says, no, let's do good things, not all those things. But you know, what's the foundation? The wind moves strongly and the value goes. And Kali Yuga progresses. And you look around and, you know, they're arguing about should there be abortion? Or should there be gay marriages? Or should there be, you know, like, what's going on? And it's like, that's the big issue of what wins votes today, of, you know, what your position is on this and that. And that's our leaders and our educators. I mean, yikes. I want a combination of, according to, you know, very careful presentation given by Shukadeva Goswami, who's not going to waste his time with somebody that's just academic. He's preparing us to live our life in this challenging age of Kali, because that's when it's presented, just before the age of Kali. Or excuse me, yeah, just at the very beginning of the age of Kali. Maharaj Prithiv has already received the personality of Kali. So it's for us. But it's not just religious principles that then are negotiable based on Vox Populi. Some people say, well, you don't really have to do this. That's archaic. Let's be modern. And all of that, you know, that's just moralities and you know, values. But what about spiritual conception upon which everything rests? It's really important. That's why. That's what gets me going. It's really important. And as Vyasadeva presents in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Brahma Samhita, I get a course in Brahma Samhita. 25 hours. And it's not the Govinda prayers yet, as part two. 25 hours. And vast part of it is about all of this stuff. Before Brahma gets his realization. And then his realization. So he did all of that. What, you know, about us? We need to learn the ABCs before we start, you know, realizing Krishna and our relationship with Krishna properly, carefully. And then we can give something of value to society and to ourselves and to our families and, you know, whatever, whoever we interact with. Something else? Yes?
In the class you have mentioned we should first have some of the proper spiritual conception.
Yes.
And then on that foundation we can start and move towards devotion.
Not move towards devotion, move within the realm of devotion to different stages of devotion.
Yes. Okay. Like, I just want to ask you for more clarification. Is that the only way, systematic way, that is that the only systematic way to
want another one?
No. No, I just
what's behind your question? What is
the motive? My question is like, we hear like many pastimes like they get liberation by some mercy, all those things. Many other reasons. The one other reason is like a person all of a sudden gets liberation by mercy. So I just wanted to clarification more on that point.
You want to make a contrast between sadhana siddhi and kripa siddhi? Is that what you're asking? We're sadhakas. Here's Prabhupada's explanation, if I've understood your question correctly. You would like a degree at Oxford University. A or B, enroll, get accepted, take the exams, get a certificate, or B, live your life, and maybe you'll get an honorary degree from Oxford University. Elton John got an honorary degree. He's just like this. He won't say what he is. A popular rock star whose life is probably, a mess. He got an honorary degree from Oxford University. Prabhupada's recommendation is A. We're sadhakas. Krishna may give us, but within sadhana there's also a ton of mercy. We can't move in sadhana without mercy. You can't do anything. You can't walk across the room without mercy. And part of that sadhana is to have a proper conception of things. So, that's what we're doing. If Krishna wants to just some miraculous something happens, and mercy. Fantastic. I'm not going to wait for that. I'm going to look for Krishna's mercy in this other way, in a way that he's extending it through his disciplic succession. And there's a how-to. And how-to manual. That's here. That address your question?
Yeah. Actually, I have two of them. I just want to restate what you said so that I'm sure that I understood it correctly. And one of those practical applications, which you spoke about, like, we are this material, we are interacting with material energy and we try to have a spiritual conception. And one of the problems that I face is the transition. Going from a very deep involvement, especially with like the techno-military complex kind of a, from that kind of a setting where the mind is fully involved there and making the transition sometimes, I mean, we are supposed to ideally even not make like transitions, we are supposed to be fully spiritual even there. But the reality is the mind is somewhere else, the consciousness is fixed somewhere else, and then even making the transition becomes tough, and it even takes days sometimes. So I'd like to know how to make this process come out of
this. Is this an application question?
Yeah.
Abhyasa yoga yuktena citta sadhana yagami. You know, that's how. The force that's driving us away from the conception and acting with a spiritual conception is our very, 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 very strong, many lifetimes deep-rooted tendency for fruitive activity. And that's working against us. In simple language, it's the blades of the fan continuing to spin. Main thing is don't plug the fan back in again and turn the switch on. But the tendency is to like reach over and in an inattentive moment and plug it in again and turn the switch on again. A lot. It's habituated behavior, conditioned behavior. So what to do about the fact there is this force acting that's not a minor one, it's a major one, acting against the current of or flow towards Krishna with a spiritual conception. In the simple language that Prabhupada uses of nectar devotion, as with a child there's walking propensity, and how the child learns to walk is after taking a step or two and tumbling, they get up again and take another step or two, and then they tumble and then get up again. Just by continuing to exercise those muscles in the legs of the child, the walking ability comes out because it's potentially there. Walking ability is innately or potentially there. Similarly, a life in devotion to Krishna is natural, completely. The other is unnatural. The conditioned tendency is unnatural. Which is stronger? Well, right now, the conditioned tendency is really strong, but stronger still is the spiritual nature. So, with faith, when I take a couple of steps and I tumble, hit the reset button. Go back to the spiritual conception. Whoops, I did it again. Now, spiritual conception. Hear, receive, with spiritual intelligence, guided by that wisdom. Get up, take some more steps, trying to be mindful. You just keep practicing abhyasa. By constant practice and by detachment is the message of another message of Bhagavad Gita. One can control the mind. The mind is the one that's taking one away to the material conception. It's the soul that can receive the spiritual conception. The mind, dear mind, please cooperate. In the long run, Kapila Dev, in the previous chapter, 25, he says something that I really like. It's one of those, instead of have four lines, it's just two lines. He says, bhakti dissolves the subtle body, the material covering of the soul. Yay! So, it's a fact. And with faith in that fact, then be guided by spiritual intelligence, and the mind will try to do its thing. And just continue, persevere with faith in the teachings and the teachers and the conception, the spiritual conception, and keep moving with it. It's like physical therapy. I'm a believer in physical therapy because I had a knee problem and I couldn't walk. And with physical therapy, I was able to do Govardhan Prakrama. Anyway, it's a long story, but it worked. So just exercise this spiritual conception muscle. Just keep doing it. However little bit you can get. Come on. I'm exhausted. Just keep doing it. And it gets stronger. Again, it's perfectly natural. That's the bottom line. If the other is unnatural, that's perfectly natural. And that realization grows, and as the realization grows, your convictions grow. Don't try to overextend and do too many exercises. Then you might harm the muscle. So you incrementally continue. Yatarham upayunjitaha. In Rupa Goswami's language. As is suitable. For the purpose of achieving association with Krishna. That's the goal. I want a relationship with Krishna. I want a loving relationship with Krishna. I want a loving service relationship with Krishna. This is the means that's being given to me to get there. I'm ready. However many times it takes to tumble, get up again. I'm committed. I'm on board. Let's go. According to my capacity. My capacity is less than the next guy, that's okay. My capacity may be greater than another guy, that's okay. Let's do it together. Let's do the spiritual conception program together. Sadhu Sangha. So the association with nice devotees helps us. Very much. Like the example I gave last night. Take a coal and a coal and a bunch of coals, and you bring them all together and put them in a pile. You have flames.
You spoke about the three Brahmins. So we have the Parabrahman, whose glance on Pradhan, and then when the Jiva Brahman gets injected, that becomes the Mahat Brahman.
Yeah.
And there's the Mahat Tattva, which is the sum total of material in the
Mahat Tattva and Mahat Brahman are the same. They're just, the terms are different because it's describing an aspect that's different, but it's the same.
Yeah, that was one confusion.
It's like Mr. So-and-so and Vishnu Das. According to, the workplace is Mr. So-and-so. The wife may have another name. It puts, it's the same person according to the, in that case, according to the relationship or the function. Same thing. Mahat Brahma, Mahat Tattva, Hiranmaya, same thing.
And you also mentioned that there are the primordial deities much before the creation started.
There's more primordial
deities, the primordial
devas.
So, in another context, we probably read in the Brihad Bhagavatam that they are the coverings of earth, water, fire, air.
Yeah.
And they have the lokas in which there is the lokapala, or the predominating deity of that loka. Do those deities?
But they don't have, there's the time energy. So what you described is after the universes have been formed, there's layers. And those same deities are now within those layers. That's their residential place. And there's forms of the Supreme Lord who they worship, who also reside there. And then there's within the universe, and then there's the devas within the universe. And they have different, administrations and change. Each Manu, he has a different set. But those primordial ones, they're within the layers. So before there's layers, they exist, but there's no layers yet. And they're like, help! Vishnu! And he helps. And then there's layers. And they have the residential places. Back. You have something?
Yes.
Okay.
Whereas this English in today's class, where you talked about like Sadhu Sangha, we need a Sadhu Sangha at every level.
We need Sadhu Sangha at every level.
So sometimes we find in the life of great devotees, they get into Krishna consciousness through the association.
And they did what?
They get into association, Krishna consciousness through the association of devotees.
Yes.
And then they give up and then go to the forest to do all the meditations and those things.
It's just like Prabhupada came to the West. That's another force. But he was always with Bhaktisiddhanta through his instruction. He never felt separation from his Guru Maharaj because he was carrying out his instruction. Does that answer your question?
So, when should we, like, a person leaves and goes to somewhere else? So, what is
the under the instruction, you do that. That's right. And that, yes.
Could you read first, like, Prabhupada actually translated the verse that Mahatattva means cosmic intelligence. What does cosmic intelligence mean?
I don't have a good answer for that, to be honest. Because intelligence comes from person. And Shirodakshayi Vishnu is present. And he's the guide. He's the super soul. He's the witness that's giving intelligence to Lord Brahma and to the thief and to the scholar and to the devotee, to Hiranyakashipu, to Prahlad. He is that source. But now, the varieties that are going to come from Mahabrahma are guided by Maya, Jakshena, Prakriti. So it's Garbhadakshay, excuse me, it's Shiradakshay Vishnu, who is that cosmic intelligence working through Mahatattva. Mahatattva, it's not blind. You've heard this kind of language. Can you just move your head down? Yeah. It's not blind, it's guided. So that cosmic intelligence is coming from the intelligent, guided by Shiradakshay Vishnu. That's the best I can do to answer that question. It's not explained by our acharya, so I'm speaking inductively. Without some explicit reference. I'd like to have specific reference that I don't have one. Therefore, it's hard to answer. Other than intelligence comes from the intelligent. That's Shiradakshay Vishnu. And he's directing material nature. So it's the cosmic intelligence. Guided by the cosmic intelligent. It's not blind. Matters. Chance is a euphemism for chance is blind random events. So we don't accept that. Events have, they're guided by and there's a purpose for them according to guna and karma. And the one who knows that is super soul. And so things happen according to his direction. That's the best I can do to explain cosmic intelligence. Okay. I think we're way past our time. Thank you all for coming this morning. I wish you very much for that.
Yeah.